Hello, and welcome to Season 2 of Within Our Reach, a podcast all about accessibility, inclusion, and leveling the playing field at work and in our community. I'm Shelley Allward-McLeod, and I'm joined by my co-host, Blake Hunsley. And our guest today is Olivia Plenner. Okay, perfect. Recreation therapist with West Bedford Transitional Health. So, Olivia, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad you said recreation therapist and not recreational, because as I got schooled right before we started, I had the wrong one in my notes. So I think that's a great place to start if we can,
Absolutely.
Because this is going to be a very fun episode for me because I know nothing about recreation therapy, which is my favorite kind of episode, is when I get to learn along with the audience, which happens more often than it potentially should.
Sure does.
So I guess to start off, what is recreation therapy? And since I had the wrong one written down, what is the difference between recreation and recreational therapy?
So recreational therapy is something that we would say is just recreational. It's just for fun. We're just kind of doing it to have a blast. But recreation therapy is where we use recreation as a tool to reach goals.
Okay.
So it's often seen in healthcare because that's where we see a lot of needs with supporting people to get discharged from hospital, people who are trying to increase their wellness, because we're utilizing it as a tool, similar to physiotherapy or occupational therapy. We're having it as a tool, though.
That's why it's the little difference there.
Okay, so what is really involved? Like coming in as a complete novice, what would I expect? What sort of potential program of therapy could I expect from you if I was seeing you in a healthcare sort of recovery sort of scenario?
It's a very vast program, so it's always going to be tailored for the person. So we're always going to look at their strengths, their needs, what their normal is as well. So it's kind of like fitting it specific for the person.
Okay.
So there's a lot of assessments. There's a lot of figuring out the person individually and then making a plan. So for example, if somebody was in hospital and they are recovering delirium, recreation therapy would be there as a support for increasing their cognitions. There's some studies that show that if you're involved in an activity that's cognitive based, that is of interest, you're going to have exponentially better recovery. So they say that if you're interested in fishing, say, then if we're working on cognition, maybe we would work on puzzles about fishing because you connect to it better. So we're trying to improve their health and wellness, but in a way that makes it enjoyable and fun and something that would stick better, I think.
Yeah. That's very interesting that you say that, because I immediately, when we started talking more about rehabilitation, or that's what was the word that was sticking in my mind, I was thinking, and was about to ask, is this only for physical injuries or illnesses? And then you showed your example of delirium. So the other misconception that I had right away was, when I think of recreation, I think of, like, you know, going to like a rec center, and I was thinking about, oh, they're going to be running or dancing, or there's going to be yoga or some kind of movement. And you then talked about puzzles about fishing.
Yeah.
So this is a very broad. Before we sort of delve into all the different types of therapy, like more examples, let's first talk a little bit about you. Okay. And how'd you get into this field?
I actually went to do a co-op in high school for psychology, and they put me with a recreation therapist. And during that time, it was only short, but during that time, I just saw the significant impact that you can have using rec therapy. And I got immediately connected to it. So then I went to Memorial University. I still was kind of thinking about psychology when I went, and luckily Memorial has a rec therapy program. So I joined in there, and I, no regrets.
Lovely. Okay. So at West Bedford Transitional Health, let's talk, what's a day in the life of your job look like?
West Bedford Transitional Health is a very new program. So a lot of what we're doing right now is experimenting, figuring it out, developing new things. It's quite an exciting time. It's a lot of fun for me specifically to be figuring all these new things out. But we accept patients from hospital who are medically stable, but there are barriers to getting home.
Right.
Something is prohibiting them from being able to go home. Sometimes it's physical. Their home is no longer accessible to them. Sometimes it's a little bit more social, where maybe their family aren't able to support them anymore. Sometimes their illnesses have progressed, where maybe home is just not as safe for them. So there's a lot of complexities on why somebody hasn't gone home from hospital directly. So we work as a very strong interdisciplinary team to figure out how we can achieve goals through all the different allied professionals, through nursing, social work, dietitian, OT, PT, and rec therapy. So if we were to say someone is going home and they're medically stable, so we'd say, okay, good, you can go. But we recognize that they're actually socially isolated. They don't leave their home. And maybe their condition is going to get a lot worse if we don't support them with getting into their community or getting out of their house or getting resources. Then we try to stop that in the tracks right there to say, well, how do we stop this from continuing to happen to them? How do we stop from them going home and having another hospital admission? We want people home and we want them successfully at home long term. So rec therapy has been a major impact on that when we say, you need to get out in community. Well, what's the barrier? Is it mobility? Is it confidence? Is it knowing what resources are out there? Is it making those social connections? Is it social skills we need to work on? So we look at all those things and we see how can we support those in our programs and in our one-to-one sessions in the facility, but also we take people out in community. We'll take them out to meet these places, meet these people, build that confidence, help them with navigating the environment, learning how to get through the winter, how to use transportation, all of those pieces so that when they go home, they don't say like, well, now I have it in here, but how do I do it? Mm-hmm. You try to actively do it with them. And it's from what I've seen, it's been very, very successful, say that.
I would imagine, because like you said, you're kind of tailoring it to people's interests as well. So, you know, I think of things like I've seen people who've been in for surgery and then afterwards it's, you have to do your exercises, and they don't because they're miserable and they hate it and nothing's been designed just for them. So it's lovely to hear that it's tailored to their interests, because I imagine the success rate and the uptake rate must be much higher when you do that.
Yes. I heard an expression one time and I can't quote who said it, but it was that physiotherapy is going to give you the strength to get out of bed. Occupational therapy is going to give you the tools to get out of bed. But recreation therapy is going to give you the reason to get out of bed.
I love that.
And as you were saying all that, when you were talking about, you know, the sort of like the allied, you know, team, I was actually thinking some of the things would be physiotherapy, some would be occupational therapy, because I work with a lot of occupational therapists and getting people to return to work, for instance, right? Yeah. Like they're often, because they come in a stressful workplace and sort of like the physical needs. But I think this is kind of important, because lots of times I'm actually seeing the reason somebody's coming back. Like it looks clear, like there's no reason from either physio or OT that they can't physically be able to do the job mentally, okay? They're not ready to return. So there's something in the way of that. And I think the same can be said, like Blake was using an example of a person going home and not wanting to do their exercises. I'm thinking with somebody being released from the hospital because, you know, they've been in the standard amount of time to be in as you're ready to go home. But if there's nobody actually at their home to assist them and they've just had surgery or whatever, they're more likely for re-injury, because some of the things they have to do are to sustain themselves. And then they're likely going back into the hospital. So this approach, and I've heard already some very positive things about the West Bedford, and I guess it's calling Transitional Health Center. I'm hearing from other people some really great things about the quality of care, like a totally different model than we're used to here in Nova Scotia, and frankly, much needed.
Yeah, I think there's so much bed pressure in hospital. They really have to get people out so they can treat those who are acutely unwell. This is just a really good opportunity for us to kind of stop those things from continuously happening to somebody. Like they don't have to continue to have the same situation happen and end up back in hospital. We can see that they've been to emerge 4 or 5 times in the last few months. Okay, let's stop that. what is happening that is making this happen. If you're in this environment in a hospital and you're doing great and physio's coming to get you and you're doing your exercising, you're feeling better than ever. But we also know you're in a one-bedroom apartment and the most amount you have to walk is maybe 3 meters within the day. So how are we going to maintain your mobility if walking around your apartment isn't really giving you that much exercise? That's when recreation therapy is going to come in and say, let's connect you to a walking group. Maybe you want to volunteer to walk dogs at a shelter. Maybe you have some friends nearby that you want to connect with or a park that you might like. This is where we make it so that somebody wants to continue to be physical, to be mobile, to take care of themselves. Same with eating. We might suggest certain diets or things that you can do from maybe a diabetic management perspective, but then to say, go home and do this by yourself, maybe it's not as feasible for them. But there's cooking groups out there, and there's different senior centers that have lunches that they serve, and places where people can actually really enjoy food together. And it might actually be much more successful than to say, here's the information, you can do this on your own.
Good luck.
It doesn't seem to be happening, right? And this is where we get those readmissions. So I think recreation therapy has really blossomed at West Bedford to show that we can really change the trajectory for people. They don't have to keep getting readmitted to hospital. I think community is one of the biggest things. Connecting people to community, what's out there, what's around you. It's hard to find, especially on your own. People who don't know technology super well or know who to call when they have questions.
Yep, to say nothing of what we encounter here a lot, the different barriers because of different disabilities as well. So I'm very pleasantly surprised, I have to say. I didn't expect there'd be such a social element to this, but it really sounds like a huge focus. And I mean, you know, somebody's going to be most at acute risk of just succumbing to loneliness if they're not only living alone, but also dealing with health crises and just trying to get out of the hospital. So this must be, I would imagine, somewhat daunting for some patients, but kind of really welcome by the end. What sort of a blossoming of these patients do you see when they uptake these activities and these kind of social engagements?
It's very fascinating because some people will come in and I'll be like, oh, they're super social, like they're good to go. And then they kind of just stick to themselves. And then others, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to really get this person going. And then they just do it on their own. It's very surprising sometimes how people will interact. But when they come in, it has to be free choice. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks the fun out of everything if I force people to do things.
Mandatory fun days. No one's favorite corporate event. No.
You must play bocce. No choice.
Yeah.
It can suck the fun of it. So it's got to be their choice. So we try to just get them there on their own and really support and motivate them to do what makes them happy. But when you've motivated someone in the right way and you see them coming to programs and you see them socializing after you know they've been living alone and they said like, I'm fine alone, I'm fine by myself. And then they start to say things to you and the team like, I've really enjoyed the programs here. I've really enjoyed being social. How can I do that when I go home? Uh-huh. That makes my whole body have goosebumps. Like it makes me so happy when I hear people say that, because they're saying, you can have this. You can have more. You don't have to go home and just be by yourself all the time. We can make these changes so that you have this long-term wellness. I've taken a few people to senior centers where I know they like to play crib, but they've always just kind of played with their family, but they're not super involved as much anymore. So we go to senior centers and then I see them want to continue going. They go to these senior centers, they make these friends. It's just heartwarming. It just makes me melt and it makes it all worth it.
I'm guessing this is something you saw in your co-op program back in high school. You said you had seen some interventions and seen the impact of them. What sort of things did you see on your co-op program that really stuck with you and made you think, okay, this is something that's going to make me smile at the end of every workday kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I was 17 and I was at the Abbey on the mental health unit.
Okay.
So with no training or anything. So I was very, very nervous, you know, I was young and was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Because I was anticipating to be with social work or psychology, so to be with the right therapist, I was like, I'm really out of my element here. But we did a few programs that I saw the effect. And sometimes it's not as obvious. People aren't going to say, hey, I loved that. I feel stronger now. They're not always going to explicitly tell you.
Yes.
But you can kind of see it a little bit in them.
There was pep in their step.
Yeah, yeah. Or you see they'll start to do something. You know, they seem like very reserved, and then you'll see them start to engage and you're like, okay, this is working. We did an art program for a group, I think it was for eating disorders, and they were painting masks to kind of represent themselves and how they felt. And then we talked about it. So everyone was talking about their mask and how that mask represented themselves, and listening to all of them be able to explain how they felt through that art was very exciting. That's when I was like, okay, this is really cool. Another gentleman and I were playing cards. I think we were just playing a board game or cards. And he was opening up to me about all the things that he had been through in his life that were really challenging for him, that led him to where he was on that day. And just seeing the ease in him to talk to a stranger. We're playing a board game, and it really was like a focused and an ease, relaxing environment for him to be able to open up. And that is something I see all the time now. We try not to do really, really formal assessments where I've got my paper, my clipboard, I'm checking things off. I try to do it in a setting where we can just talk and just learn more about each other, because to sit there and really pull that information out, people get a little bit more anxious, or you feel like somebody's interrogating you. I think if we're just talking about, hey, I love art. Do you? What kind of art do you enjoy? Oh, have you ever tried diamond art? Diamond art is so fun. Like, do you want to try it sometime? It just gets more of the person out of there. And we really are looking for the person. Uh-huh. We don't really want their diagnosis, their life situation, their social supports. It's good info to know, but we want the person.
Exactly. Because that's usually the issues that are standing in the way. So all of the examples and things that we've talked about now have been sort of from a medical or hospital setting, mm-hmm. right? But I'm guessing that there's rec therapists that are like in a general setting.
Yeah, a lot is clinical, like to do with Nova Scotia Health, outpatient and inpatient clinics, a lot of long-term care.
Right.
Unfortunately, recreation therapy is not a regulated body yet.
Okay.
We're working on it. But mm-hmm. what this means is that if there is a job that would be most appropriate for a recreation therapist or a recreation therapy associate to be doing, the job doesn't have to go to somebody with the proper training. So it could be called recreation programmer, but they could hire somebody who doesn't have the education to do that, which means that our skill set is not necessarily where it could be.
Right. Like for instance, when you think about like medical plans and the paramedicals that are covered under health plans, it includes like massage therapy, occupational therapy, physiotherapy. And in my head, I'm already thinking I've never seen RT, like recreational therapy, rec therapy. So that's watering down, right? The things that you could be doing. People are going away to get education, okay, to do this. Okay, so interesting.
Yeah. And there's a lot of us. Like, there's a lot of us who are wanting to go. And there's a lot of roles that we could do that we're not necessarily involved with yet. For example, the wellness navigators for the community health team, the wellness navigators come from all different backgrounds. And for a while, there was no recreation therapy. And now there is one.
Great.
So it's like, that's where we're trying to show our worth and our value and where can we be of support for different roles. But that regulation is going to be really important for us to have it so that it's regulated that this job has to go to a rec therapist. This job has to go to a recreation therapy associate, or this job has to go to somebody who has the 2-year diploma from NSCC or the degree and the certification from the national standards. So this is where it's going to make the difference for us, but for also people who are accessing our services. If you want to get that support from us and what we can do, it's got to be from where the background comes from, the education.
Now, you've raised something very interesting here. Is I would love to hear where you think rec therapy could be most useful in the province that is not currently being employed. Specifically thinking where you're working, I'm very happy to hear that we're doing something finally to transition people out of the hospital, because I fully understand bed pressure and all that. And I hate the idea of people just being given the boot, go home, you don't have any supports. Historically, we've been terrible at prevention in healthcare in this province. So I would love to hear from the other side. Where would rec therapy be useful, do you think, in kind of preventing more illness, more hospitalizations, or just as a social better?
I love this question.
See, it's a fun podcast, I'm telling you.
I love this question. I am a big fan, so I would like to see it everywhere. I really would. I think that a lot of the skills associated with rec therapy and with people being able to understand how to care for themselves through recreation therapy I would love to see it more in schools, have people learn from a young age how to care for themselves holistically. Because we look at the full picture. It's the cognitive, emotional, social, physical, and spiritual. And when we talk spiritual, it's not just church and religion. It's about who you are as a person, your morals, your values, what you believe in. And a lot of times, like, those domains are not well understood enough for us to respect them. So when we talk about self-care, people think like, oh, I'm going to like put on a mud mask and do my nails. Beautiful. I love it. But it's holistic. It's all about how do we care for ourselves? Getting exercise isn't about being skinny or fit. It's about boosting endorphins and your whole wellness. Being social with others boosts your endorphins. It makes you feel good. So all of these things keep us well. And I think if we had more recreation therapy and understanding of what that is in schools, people would have a better understanding long term for the rest of their lives to really know what to do. But then, you know, continuing on through the spectrum, there are a lot of long-term care facilities that don't necessarily have a recreation therapist or any kind of recreation therapy associate background there. So that can be tricky as well, because we've got a lot of dementia care, behaviors, people who need to maintain their wellness when they're as they age. It would be nice to see that. Retirement homes don't. As far as I'm aware, retirement homes don't have rec therapy. They'll have recreation programs, but not put on by recreation therapy. So I would love to see it there as well. There are some private groups that will do it, like pay out of pocket. I would love to see it on the benefits package, as you said. Absolutely. I would love that. So people pay out of pocket to have that support as well. But often right now, it's just mostly in healthcare. I would love to see it elsewhere to keep building those skills long term.
So let's, you know, and I love that, like in the community. So when you think about community organizations, we have a lot of community organizations in, well, just HRM, right? But all of Nova Scotia, similar to Reachability, right? That we're all doing something to assist members in our community. Right. Where do you see, you know, rec therapy playing a part in that? Like like programming.
I love that, because you guys run programs here.
You specifically have done this.
And the lovely Marcus and Nick have been working with me to develop a program that we run at West Bedford for our patients to get ready for employment. So like we kind of touched on before, is like when things are fun and we enjoy them and they really kind of speak to us as a person, we're more likely to do it. So there's a lot of things that people could learn about if we make it something of interest to them, right? Same with schools. You know, you sit there and you listen to a lecture for a long time. It can be really boring. You zone out. You don't really retain much. But teachers are really good at kind of integrating things to be more fun. So we're learning as we go. Very Montessori style. But we're working on a program with your team to figure out how can we help people get ready to work. And I think recreation therapy can really have a part in that as well, for us to figure out how to make it fun. So if we're talking about work skills, even, like we have a wonderful community partner, shout out to the Cobequid Food Security Network. They're going to help us with doing a cooking program. And the goal of it is, yes, cooking is fun. It's good to learn how to cook different meals, help with nutrition. But also we're looking at OT skills in this group of how can we learn how to cook on our own again if we have a recent disability now. So recreation therapy is involved there because we're helping with the social skills and we're helping with the engagement. We're helping make it fun. What are we going to cook today? So it's all these different groups coming together. Recreation therapy just amplifies it. And I think, not that I'm biased, but I think it makes it more successful. Right? So I think there's a lot of groups that are out there that are supporting people with different disabilities or with getting back into communities or people who are in marginalized community centers and things like that, that rec therapy could really amplify to help those groups get people more engaged, more, you know, help with their wellness, help with connections, help with everything, really.
Well, that's That's great. I'm so happy to hear that you're already working, doing some work with reachability. Because when I really think about it, and I love this whole getting people, you know, back into the workplace, right? And I kind of alluded to that, even from like a long-term disability or a short-term disability, the longer, lots of statistics, the longer somebody's out of the workplace, the harder it is for them to reentry. In most cases, if it was a physical injury, or medical injury, that's already healed, right? But there's usually some anxiety and some fear, all of those things on how to return to the workplace safely and safely from a holistically health perspective. So what I'm thinking here at Reachability, and you know, I do, because I'm an external consultant with Reachability, I often come in and support some, you know, practice interviewing skills, mm-hmm. right? Once they've prepared their resumes. And a good chunk of the clients here all have exceptional resumes. They have great transferable skills. And even like during the interview part, like they're able to really talk about what they can do, right?
Yeah.
But then there's this huge, it seems to be this wall that people have hit that they can't seem to get themselves to apply for a job. So there's some barrier there, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in many cases it is the fact of the, you know, because now we've drilled down and some of the people we've, you know, since hired here at Reachability have also talked to us about, it was really the anxiety of either I haven't had to communicate with anybody except myself, right? So even mm-hmm. just coming to the program has already been a big deal mm-hmm. for them.
Yeah.
But how will I communicate in the workplace, right? And then the other thing that we've really noticed, and I think that, you know, rec therapy, when you're talking about the cooking program, we've also noticed one of the barriers, you know, for people, okay, is food insecurity, right? So, you know, with providing like meals, here, like at the during programs, we've seen like a really big uptick. Like, you know, you don't often think of something as, you know, having a bowl of soup as, right? Like when you have food. So I like that, like being able to, because I really do think that there's people who aren't coming back to the workplace because they either lost their ability to socialize. Right. And so they don't really know how they can't get out of their own way. That's what I would say. Like sometimes things happen to me and I'm like, I need to get out of my own way. Right. I'm in my own head. And the other part is I think like being able to look after themselves, like being able to cook and do some of those things. Healthy eating habits. OK. Brain function. Like cognition, happy. Okay,
right? Yeah, this is all stuff that rec therapy could help with.
I really love this.
I'm very curious because, I mean, you know, yeah, we deal with this huge wall people hit. And it is, yes. It's fear and anxiety. I mean, these yes. are, like you say, these are capable people who have good resumes. They might have a little gap on the resume because they've been out usually for good reason. But they do have a ton of fear about reentering the workforce. How would you, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, how would you make it fun or enjoyable or self-bolstering, something that they yes. want to get back to?
I love that. And you can put me on the spot anytime.
Excellent. Good.
I'm a professional yapper.
expect another invite back. If that's the case.
I am a big fan of exposure therapy, but if we do it in a way that suits them. So it is individualized, of course. So let's say if somebody's just got a lot of anxiety about applying for jobs, say, right? Maybe we start small in a way that maybe is there's really no effect on them. If it doesn't go well, it doesn't matter. So something like applying to be a cat cuddler at a shelter, right? What's the outcome? You either get to go cuddle cats or you don't. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. So something where it might be something of interest to them, or we give them something that we know for sure is going to be a success. Give them a win. Give them right. a win, right. Get that practice. Be like, look, you put yourself out there. How did you feel during that time? Oh, you felt some anxiety during it. How did you feel once it was done? How did you feel once you got the result? And then once we have the knowledge that, oh, it was okay, actually, once I did it and got over that hump, I was okay. Then you have that skill and that knowledge to say, I know once I do it, I'm over that hump, it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll do it in a way that kind of works for them, that's fun for them, but it gives them that skill. It's all about the skill building through something of interest, something they enjoy.
You're touching on something that we find is a huge barrier here. When people come in the door, the first question that we ask a lot of our clients are, what are your skills or what are you good at? And we don't get, I don't know. We get, I don't have any. And it's, I have yet to meet a single person who doesn't have skills. I mean, the transferable skills, we use the video gaming as an example a lot of times. Like, you have hand-eye coordination, you have time management, you have all of these things. So yeah, it's lovely to hear that you're helping people discover those in a fun way, because I really think the lack of belief in your own abilities is one of the biggest challenges. I don't know if it's a regional thing just here in the Maritimes. We don't believe in ourselves. We're not a cocky people by nature. But like, no, I'm very glad to hear that you're helping people just find fun ways to believe in themselves again.
Yeah. And I can't believe I haven't touched on it yet. But like, purpose and meaning, feeling those things, people lose that a lot, especially in hospital. It's like a lot of people have come in and they've had busy lives. They have children, they have families, they have jobs, and they're go, 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 go. And then the world stops. Everything stops for them. And they're very much at a loss. So we talk a lot about boredom and free time, the differences between boredom and free time, and how we utilize our free time. Being bored is okay, but you have free time to do things for you. So we work on that a lot. But when we talk about purpose and meaning, because a lot of people do lose that, and that can leave a bit of a hole in their hearts to feel like, what is my purpose anymore? Like, I used to work, now I can't. I feel like, you know, I used to be running 5 kilometers a day and now I have a hard time walking to the bathroom. It's like that, the emotions take over. And when we hear the team say things like, well, they're refusing to work with us or they're not wanting to engage, it's like, I think it's a lot of feeling like they can't, feeling like they're failing, feeling like they're not making as much progress as they want. So we give them that purpose and that meaning again. And sometimes it's through volunteering, either, you know, through a group out in community, whether we talk about getting back to work again, or sometimes it's like volunteering in facility. I have little tasks that I can give somebody to give them that sense of like, oh, I gotta go. Like, you have something you need to do. I need to go do this. You have that sense of achievement, the success. I had a purpose today versus laying in bed and having everyone come to you and make, you know, do things for you. What are you doing for you? And what can you do for others? Mm-hmm. It feels good. So purpose and meaning are massive too. It's one of like my boxes that I check off for people sometimes to say, you know, this is where they're lacking. This is where they need that support to feel like a person again versus, okay, well, just do, you know, just do your things that you need to do to get out of hospital. And that's that.
Yeah. Feel hollow inside while you're doing it. It's
yeah,
okay.
But yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know what? It's all right. Just get through it and go home, you know, but then long term too, it's like, you without purpose, without meaning, if that's important to them, that's where we get depression and isolation and lack of socializing because they've lost that. So that's where rec therapy too also tries to
help. I was gonna say, so in fact you are doing prevention already. That's
yes,
great.
Prevention's huge. We do want to make sure that people, we don't work a lot with like really acutely ill people because their focus right now is getting better, medically stable. A lot of what we do in those moments, you know, if someone is maybe palliative, we are trying to get into palliative care a lot. We're trying to get into hospice, showing the value we can have to help with quality of life when you reach end of life. We've had some patients where, as we know they are palliative, we'll say, you know, kind of, what are the things that you'd like in the next little while? And they'll say things like, I really want my nails painted. You know, so we paint their nails or for comfort, you know, they're in a lot of pain. We might brush their hair or give them a gentle hand massage, put on their favorite music. You know, it's things like that, that shows that we can help with the end of life process, really boost that quality of life as well.
Right.
I'm off on a tangent again.
No, it's
not. No, I think this is important. Yeah.
It's absolutely the whole lifespan, really. Rec therapy can help with the prevention. We can help with recovery. And we can help at end of life as well for quality of life.
While we're exploring the different ways it can help and just promoting the concept here among some of us who were undereducated on the topic, we should talk too, since we're almost at the end of February, but we're still technically within it. It's Recreation Therapy Month.
It's so Recreation Therapy Month.
I would love to hear from you, because you're clearly a fan and excited. That's great. I would love to hear from you what recreation therapy is, you know, kind of all about, and what what the kind of goals are for Recreation Therapy Month. I assume part of it has to be educating the public and dispelling some myths. So yes. I'd love to hear about those.
Yes, absolutely. So Recreation Therapy Month has never been something that I've really participated in as much. But this year, I am a member of the Nova Scotia Therapeutic Recreation Association, and they are very big into it. So they really inspired me to also get into it. So we did have a couple events at work. They hosted a couple events as well that I participated in that were super fun. We went curling, which was really good, and I'm not very good at it, but I had so much fun. And we did networking nights, and there was trivia and a happy hour. It was a lot of fun. The whole goal of us really celebrating Recreation Therapy Month is to bring awareness to what we do. And I think one of the things that a lot of people miss, particularly people we work with that may not see it, is that we look like we're having fun, and we are, but there's always a purpose. We always have a goal. There's always a reason for what we're doing. Although people can just be laughing and hooting and hollering when we play bocce, but as they're playing bocce, we're explicitly giving each person some guidelines to really push them. In recreation therapy, we have something called flow, where we want to find everyone's flow, and it's their equal amount of skill to challenge. If it's too easy for them, it's not fun, and it's not really hitting any goals. If it's too hard, people are more likely to give up. So we want to find that flow where it's like they're really enjoying it because it's the right amount of challenge, but it's also testing them a little bit so you feel like it's worth putting that effort into. So we're constantly doing that so much that during these times like Rec Therapy Month, we want to show people how much thought we put into stuff. For example, the recreation programmer and I put on a bocce game. I talk about bocce. You have no idea how popular it is. They love it. We put on a bocce game for our staff. And during that time, we were explaining how we're trying to achieve flow. We're also trying to like challenge people individually based on their needs. So if somebody, you know, it's your turn, and I think that it would challenge you just a little bit if you stood up and took three paces back versus sitting down close. So then it's like we're showing people how not only can you change games and you can modify them for your own needs to make it harder or easier or whatever it is you want it to be, but also when things are hard, you can do it. Yes. So we'll have people say, you know, use your non-dominant hand, and they'll do it, and they're surprisingly more successful than they thought they would be. And it's to show that if something happens to you, or you're going through something where maybe you're not doing something to the extent you used to do it, it doesn't mean you can't do it. Mm. Modifications and adaptations are completely fine to make it so that you can still do things. But to show everyone what it is we do, how much thought we put into things, how much we're trying to build skills that are long-term is really the focus of Recreation Therapy Month, to really highlight all the things that we're trying to do to help people.
I wondered if there's misconceptions out there because, you know, just the name, recreation therapy. Well, that sounds very fun. So I imagine you must have people who say, oh, you get to have fun at work all day. How nice for you, that don't necessarily understand the depth of thought that goes behind these activities.
I don't think anyone who knows me at this point would ever say that to me.
They've gotten the talk. Yeah.
They've had the talk. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people will sometimes send me referrals for patients for things that are not necessarily what the recreation therapy goals are. I don't usually have a problem just saying that's not what we do, and just kind of giving that education to say, this is kind of where we do focus. We don't kind of do that. You know, if somebody's exhibiting behaviors, they might say, can you just sit with them for the day? Well, no, I can't sit with them for the day. That's not what we do. However, can we provide engagement for that person that interests them specifically, that keeps them engaged so that those behaviors might decrease, right? If you think about somebody who might have dementia, who's exhibiting some behaviors, if you put them in a chair facing nothing, doing nothing, what do you think the chances are that a behavior is going to happen? Probably pretty high. But if they're engaged in something that's meaningful to them, the chances of those behaviors happening is less, for sure. So that's where it's like, I can just provide that education for when people say like, oh, can you do this thing? It's like, well, that's not rec therapy.
It's true. I was thinking that's a really good example. My mother is in, you know, late stage dementia. And maybe at mid stage, she had somebody in who was like working with her in she's in a facility, and they found out, like, you know, from her apparently, that, you know, she loved, you know, listening to the news, right? Listening to Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, like, you know, the, mm-hmm. the things. But she has macular degeneration on top of this, right? So I could never understand, like, why does she have the TV on? She can't see it, right? Like what's that about? Well, it was their idea to put that on. She can still hear it. There's nothing wrong with her hearing, right? And it made her feel really good, and it made her feel like she wasn't having these, like, forgetful moments, because she was still in that phase where she knew something was wrong with her memory but would have good days. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought about it that way. Like, you know, like the fact of, like, well, why would you have the TV on? Like, we can't see it, right? But again, it would be something that would made her happy. So then it gave her a purpose. And it gave her purpose between specific times each day that she, like, no joke now, like, even though, like, she doesn't know my name or anything, that she knows what time it is to go sit in her chair and at a certain time and watch TV, yeah. right? Like, it, and she's so happy during that time.
Yeah. Probably makes her feel a bit like herself, her old self again, which sounds like the entire right? point of this.
So, I like that. I really like your explanation. And so while we're on the, you know, sort of plugging the, your
yes, it's the promotion time.
This is promotion time.
This, you know, ad has been brought to you by.
Exactly. You know, so what message, you know, you talked a little bit about the fact that you're not a regulated body. So, you know, on that sort of theme and anything else you want to add to it, what message would you like to share with policymakers or funders, especially because it's Recreation Therapy Month?
It is. Yeah, I would love to. I would love to say that, you know, as an association, we're working hard to work with the government to become a regulated body. We're doing all of this purely because there's so much value in what we do. We want everyone to have that value. And right now there's risk. There's risk associated with having the title associated with people who don't necessarily have the right education or training to do the job. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people who are out there that have the right training to do the job. That's where the focus needs to be. We need to have the right professionals in these jobs so that we can do the job that needs to be done. Because of the preventative nature, taking the weight off the healthcare system, let us do that. Let us help people. Let us help the seniors in long-term care. Let us help with the behaviors, and that people can stay in long-term care and they don't have to be, that's a whole other pickle, but, you know, let us be that support to alleviate the healthcare system, to keep people out of there. But then when they're in there, help get them home successfully. So if they would help us with the regulation, I think that it would make a very big difference in the success rates for people in community.
That's fantastic.
I have my hands crossed, like I'm begging. I'm like, please.
Please. Yes, for those that can't see.
To all the policymakers who listen to this show, yes, frequently, please listen. Thank you.
Maybe in closing, what would you give as advice, okay, for people who are considering this career?
If you're considering working in recreation therapy, be a member of NSTRA.
Yes.
There's my plug. For real, though, I never really got involved. I've lived in other provinces, so I haven't been here for many years, many of my working years. But now that I'm involved with the association and I see how people in this field really support each other and that we really support the students and we want to see this field grow successfully together. Everyone is very passionate about us growing, that I've been reaching out to rec therapists to be like, can you help me with West Bedford? I'm trying to, like, develop this program. What do you think? What's your opinion? And I've been met with so much warmth from all these different recreation therapists in different fields, different areas, hospital, community, everywhere. And I was very, very surprised by it. So if people are thinking about working in recreation therapy or going to school for recreation therapy, or even if you're interested in like, what is recreation therapy? If you haven't really understood from all this conversation of what is
the episode,
right? Yes.
But if you have more questions or you want to, you just want to know more about it, message or reach out to any recreation therapist that you might be able to contact, but also reach out to the association. Like Nova Scotia Therapeutic Recreation Association is full of wonderful people. We love advocating. I'm also the chair for the advocacy committee, so you can reach out to advocacy@nstra.info. You can reach out to membership. You can reach out to anyone, really, from check out the website, see us there. But the more that you connect with us, the more that you can see the world of recreation therapy and what we're trying to do. So if anyone's interested, please, please just reach out to us.
That's excellent. And I think one thing that you didn't say that I think is important at the beginning of the session, Olivia talked about how she got into this, that in, you know, in high school as a sort of a work placement or a little co-op, she was thinking she was going to be a psychologist. And she went on, you know, sort of a job shadowing. So, you know, that's another, you know, great opportunity. Like if you're in high school and you're thinking about, you know, what are my options? I'm looking for something similarly in this field, social work, psychology, rec, occupational therapy, a great opportunity to reach out to somebody from the Nova Scotia Rec Therapy Association.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe you'll be able to shadow somebody for a day to get an idea of what they do.
Yeah, I love when people shadow me.
It's hard. Like it's, you hear a lot from, you know, students. You're like, as you said, you were 17. At 17, like you did not have life all figured out, right? Like
I wouldn't have known this was a career option to start with. Right? So
no, and like when I graduated, I'm not gonna tell you the year, it was a long time ago, but when I graduated, there was I think like 30 of us in the class, and now there's like a wait list to get in.
Amazing.
So it's much more popular. It's definitely booming, but we're also, I mean, part of the board too is like we're trying to advocate for more roles in different places. So like we're making more roles. There's more people graduating. Like we're really trying to like show ourselves here. So the more that you connect with other rec therapists, reach out, talk to us about what's going on, the more you can kind of get into this world. And it's a wonderful world.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
Oh, it's you today. Don't worry, I love to talk, but it's scripted as you today. I'm leaving this in, by the way. Just to show our level of professionalism.
That's why I'm not saying anything, because I know, like, whatever I say, he will not take out. So on that note, thank you so much, Olivia. Thanks for listening to Within Our Reach. Season 2 of our podcast is made possible thanks to the support of the Province of Nova Scotia and the Support for Culture program. If you have feedback on an episode, an idea for future episode topics, or if you're interested in appearing as a guest, even after you know that it's not going to be edited, write us at withinourreach@reachability.org. Thank you very much, Olivia, for joining us today.
Thank you both very much for having me.
And happy Recreation Therapy Month.
Thank you.